And it is the Shilling Show on a beautiful day today, a Tuesday edition of this program. David Murata is the president of Murata Wealth Management, online at muratonmoney.com. And today, talking about three factions of today's conservative movement and the GOP. And David, welcome to the Shilling Show, a very interesting subject. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so let's start out by talking about the history of factionalism in the GOP, because, you know, you've identified three areas, which we'll get to in a little bit. But has this party ever truly been unified, or has it always had these factions in it?
I think what's interesting is, more often than not, historically, the Republican Party has been the one that's been unified, and the Democratic Party has been a coalition of different factions. And what's different today, I think, is that the roles are somewhat reversed.
Mm-hmm.
The moderate side of the Democratic Party was voted out of office, and now it's very, very extreme on the liberal side. And on the conservative side, we now have three different factions instead of one, and it's a much less unified front. And so that's one of the reasons why the Republican Party ran so many candidates for president this year, is the vetting process was the party trying to decide which one was going to be its standard bearer and which vision of conservatism was going to win. And who won, obviously, was Mitt Romney, who represents the Rockefeller Republicans of the standard. GOP is a good description of that. And a lot of people think GOP and Republicans means the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But what's interesting is, for some of the factions of the conservatives, they like either the GOP and they don't like Republicans, or they like Republicans and don't like the GOP.
Mm-hmm.
And that shows that the party really is split, and the names are beginning to take on meanings of factions rather than just one grand old party.
I want to go back to something you said, because you talked about the parties kind of flipping Democrat and Republican, because there's a very interesting thing happening right now which illustrates your point perfectly regarding the Democrat Party. So you have this nomination, I believe, of Richmond Mayor Dwight Jones, happens to be black, happens to believe what God told us about marriage and what marriage is and what it is not. And so you've got him being put forward to lead the Democrat Party of Virginia, and all of a sudden he's being attacked by some of the LGBT groups. Here's one called People of Faith, which is a fraud group, because they're not of faith in God. They're in faith of something else. But they're attacking this guy, Dwight Jones, very gently, because he happens to be black, but they're attacking him nonetheless, is not being suitable because he doesn't believe in the secular humanist definition or redefinition of what God said about marriage. And so it puts people like David Toscano and Dick Zaslaw, who typically believe that about marriage, in a bad place, because they have political connections to Dwight Jones. And so they're being forced to defend him in this. But it appears that right now, if you don't hold these positions, you cannot be a Democrat.
It's true. In the elections where the House was taken over by the Republicans, all of the socially moderate and physically conservative Democrats got voted out of office. They were in swing states that swung to the Republicans. And, mm-hmm. and so all the Blue Dog Democrats and things like that, those factions just don't exist in Congress anymore. And the party on the Democratic side became much, much more extreme. And that's been happening, as well as districts section themselves off into 100% Democrats or 100% conservatives. Then you have to swing more and more liberal or conservative just in order to win the primaries. And the primary is the real election in those, not the general election. So, yes, both parties have become, I think, a little bit more extreme, but it's unified the Democrats and it's split the Republicans.
977-1070 is the phone number. You talk about, you know, where the Democrats have gone as a party, and I voted for Virgil Goode as a Democrat and as an independent and as a Republican. And I often look across the country, you know, are there any Democrats, a single Democrat I could find who's like Virgil Goode that I could vote for? And I've never seen any. And I talk to people from all walks of political life, and they sometimes talk about, you know, the conservative Democrats, the ones who are concerned with the Constitution and so forth. And I ask them, could you name me one, please, in elected office? And I don't hear of any. So I think your contention that they have been purged or have left voluntarily is absolutely true, because this party does seem unified behind principles that many would call socialist.
Yeah, and I think that's what's bringing out the differences in the Republicans, because we have to put together some kind of a coalition and putting aside some of our disagreements just to try to roll back the fiscal liberals and the socialists on the other side that are really doing things that most people say, as Greg said, this is not the America that I know. I don't think this is the right way to go, and I can't believe our country's headed this direction.
I think the other thing that's happened, and we're talking with David Morata, 977-1070, is a lot of people have re-educated themselves on constitutional principles. I think my own education was not terrific as far as understanding the Constitution, and this is going back several decades, and understanding what it really means, you know, what the real meaning of the foundation of this country was. And so people have taken it upon themselves to re-educate themselves, which I think is terrific. And so there is a movement back towards these fundamental constitutional principles.
It is true. And the problem is that if you actually moved back toward constitutional principles, you would end up with a country that's not even moderate. It's very extremist in the terms of liberty and freedom, bordering on libertarian, at least. And so the problem is, when you move back to those principles, you find a country which is governed libertarian and which is socially very conservative. But it's not necessarily legislatively very conservative. And so that brings up the tension between some of the Republican factions. Is, are you going to try to legislate a morality that we had in this country a long time ago, or are you just going to try to have the libertarian principles that are ensconced in the Constitution? And I think the best people try to do one publicly and one privately.
Let's go to the phones. I do have a comment on that, but I don't want to run out of time because David is waiting for us. Hey, David, you're on with David Morata. Go right ahead.
Hey, guys. Yeah, good topic today. Hey, my question, I guess this certainly could be to both of you all. In your opinions, do you think there is realistically a candidate who will be able to beat Hillary Clinton in 2016? I mean, it's pretty much assured she's going to be running. And do we have anybody who could, in your opinion, unite the conservatives enough to get her out of there? So I'll hang up and listen to your answer. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a great question. Thank you very much, David. So let's let David Morata jump on that. Do you see anybody emerging who could garner up the support from across the board to beat Hillary?
Yeah, in order to unify the Republicans, you need someone who is firmly in one camp who runs as though they're in the other camp. And that would unify the factions among the Republicans. And I think the best hope for that is someone who is socially conservative and says that's not what we ought to do. We shouldn't legislate our morality. We should live our morality, and we should have libertarian principles in our government. And I think that would be the best way of bringing the social conservatives, or sometimes called the Christian right, more into the libertarian Tea Party groups. And I think that's in opposition to, unfortunately, the GOP or the Rockefeller Republicans, who want to continue a corporate welfare system that really is not defensible and not liked by anyone.
We're going to get to those various factions in greater detail on the other side, 977-1070. And to get to David's question, I'm not sure, maybe a Rand Paul could do this. He has a lot of that libertarian influence, and he speaks a lot of common sense. He's a plain-spoken person, and I think he can excite young people who wouldn't typically or necessarily affiliate with the GOP. I also want to say one other thing about all of this and regarding the social conservatives and the concern for things that are going on in the country today. And I hearken back to John Adams, who said, and I think this is one of the most important quotes, and it's why I repeat it so often, that the Constitution was meant only for a moral and a religious people. It is unsuitable to the governance of any other. That's why the Constitution could be so brief, and that is why we have laws like 2,000 or 3,000 pages plus 30,000 regulations for Obamacare, because America has lost that. So if we're no longer a moral or a religious people, the Constitution becomes unable to govern this nation, and then people think they have to start putting laws on everything because people have lost their center. That's the problem that we face, and that is only turned by turning back to God. That's the only way. It's 1229, 977-1070. We continue with David Morata right after the news. ¶¶ 877-1070 is the phone number here on The Shilling Show. Hey, coming up at the top of the next hour, Shaq Hill for United States Senate will be here in studio with us. Also, Ken Boyd joins us. Right now, we continue with David Murata. He's online at Murata on Money. Lots of great articles there, and I hope that you'll check out. There's a lot of really terrific information, documentation on that website, MurataOnMoney.com. We're talking about factions of the GOP, factions of Republicans and the conservative movement. And so let's get into some more detail on the specifics of some of these factions. I'll tell you what, I look at the term Rockefeller Republicans as an insult. And, you know, I guess, David, some people would be totally comfortable with that term. But I just look at that as like blue bloods who are really out of touch, and maybe they're, you know, they're all about some specific business interests. But if they want to play nice with the government and get some more government business and so forth, they're fine with that. And that really rubs me the wrong way. So I would call somebody a Rockefeller Republican, refer to them that way as a demeaning description.
Well, it certainly captures at least the nuance that, you know, the primary slogan of the Rockefeller Republican is, you know, what's good for business is good for America.
Mm-hmm.
And so any kind of corporate welfareism, which, you know, we call cronyism because we don't agree with it. But I think your distaste of that may be because you don't identify with the GOP. You identify with conservatism more than the GOP. And I did it on purpose because I think, you know, I use that term on purpose because I think that that's the problem within the Republican Party. Is the Republican Party is split between people who think that big government is okay so long as it's doing the right things, and people who think that big government is never okay.
Yeah.
And I think the problem is that people think that the government can help. And I agree with the slogan, what's good for business is good for America, mm-hmm. but I just don't agree that corporate welfareism is good for business. I think it helps the large businesses at the expense of the small businesses. And in this country, we're willing to bail out one big company, even if that means 100 smaller companies will go under as a result of our practices.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd rather have the 100 smaller companies because, one, diversification is better. You don't put all your eggs in one basket. And second, because job growth is better in the small businesses and the middle-sized businesses.
Yes.
The large businesses make profits by actually cutting their workforce. And third, just any kind of corporate welfare means that the big companies can lobby the government to get what they want to reduce competition for the smaller companies to be able to either enter the market or to compete with them when they do enter the market. And so I agree with you. Rockefeller Republican, to me, is not the party we should have. It's not what conservatism means. But when you look at the kinds of candidates we've run recently, the Rockefeller Republicans seem to be the ones that run the most easily. And they talk about, I'm going to do things that are good for business. No politician can do something which is good for business. It's an anti-tautology. It's just a logical fallacy to think that government does things that are good for business when what's good for business is competition.
I think the one thing that government can do that's good for business is to get out of the way.
Right, exactly.
And so we have in Albemarle County, and this is something that bothers me, is that so we have this proposal, hey, let's have an Office of Economic Development. Now, I heard some people say, well, this is really because we've created such a bureaucracy that we have to create a second bureaucracy to help them untangle through the first one and when they're trying to do business here. But to me, the real solution would be just start rolling back these regulations, start getting out of people's business, start allowing people to just come here. And if they want to open a business, don't micromanage them. That would be the true solution to economic growth, not a Department of Economic Development, although I do understand the argument as well. We've got all this stuff. We better have somebody to help us navigate it. At least that's better than nothing.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
Let us go to the phones here and say hello to Greg. Greg, welcome to The Shilling Show, and you're on with David Murata.
Hey, David, I really respect everything you say. Very quickly, I have this argument with some Democrats who are just hardworking people who, you know, had a hard time making it, and they look at the health care bill as an option, and they also hate big business. He said, well, we're not going to ever vote Republican. They're all about big business. I said, no, you're wrong. I said, that's where the Tea Party comes in. I said, you guys really don't understand that we're against corporate welfare. And, David, I would just like you to explain or say something I can say to them in simple terms to get them to even just listen to that because they close their ears. and I'll sign off. And I think Rand Paul's the man. But other than that, go ahead and answer the question. I really appreciate it. Thank
you. This is a great question, because how do we encapsulate this in a couple of sentences that somebody will listen to?
Yeah, Greg is exactly correct. The Tea Party shares a lot with the other two camps of the conservatives, but it does not share very much with the GOP or the Rockefeller Republicans. The Tea Party is about 26% libertarian and 52% more of the social conservatives. But the Tea Party is by definition taxed enough already and is just looking at the fiscal issues. And so if it includes social conservatives, it only includes the social conservatives that think social conservatism shouldn't be legislated. And unfortunately, both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party want to legislate morality to a great extent. And the Tea Party says, look, all of that stuff is ridiculous. What's really important is the fiscal conservatism. And the fiscal conservatism of the Tea Party is in direct sort of rebellion against the Rockefeller Republicans. And the Rockefeller Republicans are just better organized. They've got better money. They've got corporate sponsorship. And so that's why the Tea Party looks like, at times, a bunch of bumbling buffoons when it comes to politics. They're not politicians, and they don't know how corporations can buy government positions. And so they're just a populist reaction against that. And it does gain its support from the other two groups of the conservative party.
Greg, thanks for the call. That leaves a line open at 977-1070. I want to dig into this a little bit more, David, because you talk about legislating morality, and I want to get some examples from you. For example, there are people who are social conservatives who say that abortion is murder and should be illegal. Is that legislating morality, or is that protecting the right to life as delineated in our foundational principles?
It's a great question. Libertarians are split on the question about abortion as to whether or not they believe that the fetus is a person, in which case they are said you must protect it. And if they think that the fetus is not a person, then they think you need to give the choice to the prospective mother or the woman who's pregnant. And I know libertarians who split on that issue, you know, either of those two positions. So that's one of the issues that even to libertarians who are very, very careful about the morality, they will split one of two ways. And that's why it's such a huge topic in American politics. You know, I think that there is some compromise we could reach in this country to say at some point during the development of the fetus, it becomes a person and has its own rights. And whether you push it all the way back to conception, as I know you and I probably do, or you set it somewhere around what used to be called quickening, and you set it at 6 weeks or something like that, I think there is something to be protected there, and we could probably reach a compromise, which would be not what anyone in the country agrees to, but at least something that we could all agree on that would be a much more humane view than late-term abortions or partial birth abortions or the kind of horrific butchery that we have now and that Democrats seem to want to support. So, but I understand, you know, I understand that there's probably a sliding scale in there where it becomes more and more horrific the later term the pregnancy, and we could probably reach something for that. Probably a more clear view is, for example, what is marriage? And I think, you know, the Christian right or the social conservatives are very adamant now that marriage be between one man and one woman. I take a different view, and it's a more libertarian view, and that is the government has no business deciding what marriage is and isn't or basing any law upon what marriage is or isn't. Marriage is something that you do before God. And we didn't even used to license marriages in this country or in most states. You didn't have to have a marriage license. Marriage licenses were put in place in a lot of states to prevent interracial marriages. So the state's involvement in marriage has always been, I think, neutral at best and evil at worst. Mm-hmm. So I would think that, for example, my wife and I are committed in our marriage, but if we were not married in the state's minds, we would pay a lot less tax. And there's no reason for the government to have an institution where it licenses marriage and then discriminates against married people. It just discourages marriage. And so I know a lot of Christians who question whether or not they should get married legally, because there's very few benefits of getting married legally, even though they want to commit each other commit to each other for life in a church in a big public ceremony. So, even something like that, I think that the mistake that the conservative or social conservatives make is that they think that morality can be legislated by the state, and the minute the tide turns, then they're realizing that the state is legislating immorality. And now what do? Because they've empowered the state and they believe in the power of the state to legislate whatever is right and true and beautiful. And now the state has the power to tell them they're wrong and to legislate something else.
977-1070 is the phone number. We have one segment left with David Morata talking about factions of the conservative movement and the GOP. When we get back on the other side, I would like to talk a little bit more about the libertarian aspect of conservatism, and I know some libertarians take great offense at being called conservatives. So anyway, we'll have to sort all of that out. We'll take your calls at 977-1070. Chilling Show back in a moment with David Morata. Lord, I was born a rambling man. 977-1070, that's the phone number. David Morata is our guest, the final segment here, talking about factionalism inside today's Republican Party, and even on the outside, I think, of people who might otherwise affiliate. Let's talk about the libertarian wing. And I want to talk first of all about big L versus small L, because I think it's an important distinction in this conversation.
Yeah, so a big L would be you're a more diehard libertarian as part of the Libertarian Party.
Mm-hmm.
A little L, I guess, would be you have libertarian leanings and you're a more moderate libertarian. I am all for hyphenated political names.
Yes.
And so I am a libertarian Republican, mm-hmm, or a Bourbon Democrat.
Okay.
You can take either one. Bourbon Democrat was Grover Cleveland, the last libertarian president who vetoed more bills than anyone else.
Yay.
Libertarian Republican is someone who identifies with all the physical conservatism but thinks that our private lives need to be moral. And if your private life is not moral, it's really not my business to try to make you moral through legislation. It's just not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that kind of blending really does help in politics, because I would vote for a libertarian Republican more than I would vote for just a Republican, because by doing that, you're telling me a lot about your politics, about what you are and aren't going to do. And if you say you're a Democrat, at this point, I'm just assuming you're a wide-eyed socialist.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd really like to know, you know, what you think about fiscal issues. And you know, there are very few Bourbon Democrats running these days. Libertarians are about 45% identified with the Republican Party and about 5% identified with the Democratic Party.
Is that self-identification?
Self-identification,
okay.
Right. And that still leaves 50% that don't identify with either party.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes when I have a pollster, I'll start pulling his chain a little bit when he says, are you a Democrat or a Republican? I'll say, well, you're not offering any of the other options. Well, are you a moderate? No, I'm not a moderate. I refuse that one,
yeah,
too.
The
choices are not Republican, Democrat, and moderate. And the moderate would be the third choice I would pick. I would pick a Republican, a Libertarian Republican first, or a Bourbon Democrat before I would pick a moderate. Moderate is almost the exact opposite of my political views. And so I think the hyphenated names works well to help identify people.
But there are, as I've noticed over the years, some libertarians, and maybe even many whom I've spoken with, who have a real disdain for the Republican Party. And maybe it's because the Republicans proclaim certain things in their creeds and so forth that that they don't live up to or even come close to living up to. And I would understand that anger. But, I mean, I have talked to libertarians before. I have seen some of the press releases from the National Libertarian Party that have come out that are super critical of Republicans.
Yeah, and there's usually two reasons they're critical of Republicans. They're critical of Republicans because of their corporate welfareism. So they're critical of Rockefeller Republicans. That's
mm-hmm.
almost the opposite side of the political spectrum from, I think, libertarians. And that's why the Tea Party doesn't really like the Rockefeller GOP Republicans.
Yeah.
And the second reason is because I think that social conservatives tend not to make a distinction between their personal morality and their legislative agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's terribly important. I've seen even really good politicians that I agree with most of what they want to legislate get suckered in by questions like, do you think marriage is between one man and one woman?
Mm-hmm.
And then their answer ought to be, well, first, I want to say I think the government has no business in marriage. When they enter marriage, they usually do it for the wrong motives and they just mess it up. And they really should not discriminate against people whether or not they're married or not. That's a religious ceremony before God. It's a joining of two people, and it's none of the government's business. They need to start with that answer, and then they need to say, for me personally, mm-hmm. In my religious tradition, marriage is between one man and one woman before God for life as exclusive monogamous sexual partners.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've got they've described both what their political legislative agenda is, and they've described their personal morality. And I think that answer would appeal to a lot more people than when they get suckered into short soundbite answers.
So when we say the government's not involved or shouldn't be involved in marriage, does that mean that we get rid of the tax breaks for married people or some sort of tax code that defines marriage or anything that the government would have to do regarding marriage? Do we get rid of all of that?
Yeah, and most of the reasons that the government gets involved in marriage is taxation, and mm-hmm. a flat tax would eliminate all of that.
Yeah,
any kind of a fair tax or consumption tax would eliminate all of mm-hmm. that. And you said the benefits for married people, the benefits are only if one of them doesn't work. My wife and I both own businesses, and as business owners, all of our corporate income flows onto our taxes personally. And unfortunately, one of ours stacks upon the others, and we get pushed into the higher and higher tax brackets, and our businesses get taxed at much higher brackets than they'd be taxed if we were single, because we're both small business owners. And that kind of thing, I think, is just wrong. It discourages marriage tremendously. And I've known some couples who want to get married but can't afford it because they both run businesses or they're both highly successful careers.
David Morata, it's been a terrific discussion today. He's online at moradaonmoney.com. I look forward to the next visit, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's going to wrap this hour of The Shilling Show, but we have so much more ahead for you, including an impromptu visit from Shaq Hill for U.S. Senate. He'll be right here in the studio with us coming up at the top of the hour. Supervisor Ken Boyd joins us. The county budget and all these people that want to take more and more and more of your money. Sheffield, Ello, Loopy Liz, the rest of them, they could never get enough. And it all comes down to, well, I feel that they can afford to pay it, so that's just. That's a dangerous way to govern, but that's where we are today in Albemarle County. 977-1070, Shilling Show, back in a moment.